Welcome back to The Crack, everybody. How are you? I hope you're all having a beautiful, beautiful Friday. It's not the biggest of weekends in MMA this weekend. Of course, we have Charlie Olives topping that beautiful, beautiful Rio card. We talked to Guilherme Cruz about that last week. But we thought it'd be a good time to scrutinize our fellow journalists on Uncrowned this week. You know, there was a lot of lip from Mr. Ariel Helwani this weekend. You know, I don't know if you were watching it there, but, you know, I wanted to jump in. I wanted to scrutinize. And we didn't get the time to scrutinize because of all these wonderful guests he keeps booking. They weren't like, here, Pizzy, shit all over my takes for a few minutes. So I'm going to really flesh that out today. Thank you, Ariel. You know, I love you. I don't know if you heard this, but, you know, he's talking about... He has forever been talking about 2016, as has Chuck Mendenhall, who will join me on the show momentarily. But he's saying now that 2016 could be rivaled by what happens next year, 2026. He's talking about the return of Ronda Rousey is potentially happening. We're talking about the return of Conor McGregor potentially happening. The return of Jon Jones, who didn't really go away for that long, let's be honest, against Alex Pereira potentially at the White House. We're also talking about potentially Francis Ngannou returning to face Tom Aspinall. And again, another one, which is probably more likely, is Ilia Topuria v. Paddy Pimblett. Now, if all those things came together, the man might have a point. But we need to go through this blow by blow because we were all high on enthusiasm on Monday when he let this go. I've seen myself losing my mind as he says it. I'm rocking. I'm gesticulating. Chuck Mendenhall, get in here and calm us down here. As much as we all want this to be true, surely to God, this is not all 100% possible, sir.
Yeah, Pizzy, I haven't seen a lot of this kind of thing come through for us in the past. So I'm a little skeptical, but I will say, you know, that is a lot of lip from our guy, Ariel Helwani. They used to call him the Syracuse Lip, I think, back in college, so that's fitting. But there's a lot there that could happen. I think he actually I was looking back at his clip, and I think he said if 60% of this doesn't happen, it would be a huge disappointment. He's right in a weird way because you're like, man, you do have all of this potential that could be made. You really could do an incredible set of fights, and so many of them would be more compelling than most things we've seen over the last few years. I just don't, you know, it remains to be seen if we can get it done. You know, sure. I'm not trying to poo-poo on it, but I'm like, I hope that he's right about this.
I just, you know what, I will say, like, it is fun to be excited. Like, you know, like we've been through the doldrums a bit here as of late. And I even heard him on our former boss, Mr. Bill Simmons' podcast, and he laid it all out for him. But I just, in case anyone missed this brief segment on Monday, I want to play because I want you to see the enthusiasm in Ariel's face here and mine. I'm losing my mind there in the corner. Give us a go with that, please, on air, Jordan.
Let's get crazy here. We're looking at a scenario, 2026, 10 years after the greatest year in MMA history, Sweet 16, where we're looking at Alex versus John, Tom versus Francis, which we just kind of came up with now, but let's just stick with me.
Rumblings of
the return of Conor McGregor.
The rumblings. Ariel Helwani.
The return of Conor McGregor.
What did we talk?
And oh, by the way, the return of Ronda Rousey, which isn't a crazy thing. I told you this last week. This is a real thing. This is a real thing.
This is it. Oh, baby.
Ellison family, you have just stepped in.
Shit escalated very quickly there.
Look at what they're looking at. Oh, by the way. Ilya versus Paddy to start the year. I saw some people saying.
Justin Gaethje.
Get out of here. It's right there. Ilya versus Paddy is staring you in the face.
Yeah.
Are you out of your mind? With all due respect to Justin, he's staring right at you.
You know.
By the way.
I think you were going to add another one. Guess what else?
Well, I can't. We could add one, right? Like 2016 was the year that that New York. I mean, we're not going to get this again, but like that was the year that New York became a legal, you know, legalized MMA. So he's right about the enthusiasm about that year, you know, being big.
Yeah,
replicating it, you know.
let's like give people an idea of that. Of course, there's like lots of new fans to the sport now. 2016, as you say, it was New York finally opening the doors. There was years of conversations about that. The Culinary Union are blocking us in New York, Chuck.
Yeah.
And it happened. And it's also McGregor is in his pomp. Like this right. is the year of this is the year of his brief retirement before 200, the Nate Diaz fights, the Eddie Alvarez fight. It is a magical time, and really, I always think about that New York moment because, do you know that what is that Hunter S. Thompson quote from Fear and Loathing, where he's like, you could almost see the high water mark, you know,
yeah.
of intrigue in the sport. I was there that night in Madison Square Garden, which feels like it was like the
yeah.
the crowning moment of the whole thing, but it truly was a magical, magical time in MMA, wasn't it?
Not only did he, like, so not only does he win the second belt, and he does it in a magical way at Madison Square Garden, right? Like where it's just legalized and it feels like everything, but he wants equity in the company, which we'd never seen. It was like we were in an unparalleled kind of situation in 2016 for these reasons. But honestly, the reason, if you don't have Conor, it would have been a very big year. It would have been big in a lot of ways, but that's what makes it magical. And people kind of forget, if you came into the sport afterwards, just how big of an influence he was. We, as a media, we as a fan base, we as a public kind of standing by as Conor was doing this, we're living sort of vicariously through this guy because for the longest time, it felt like we had a ceiling within the sport, not just within the, you know, mainstream, like could it be accepted into other sports? Could it be accepted in a bigger way on TV? Could it like become that ubiquitous as other sports? Suddenly you're playing in whole different spheres. And like as they were kind of going on, you know, and Conor was breaking down the barriers, and it was, and Ronda had already stood, and she was using this whole year for her comeback of the year, I believe, when she came in 2016 for the Amanda Nunes fight. It carried such an active part of our imagination and our will, because everything that everybody had put forward, right? Everything that we'd fought for the sport, if you loved it, was finally coming into fruition in the biggest possible ways in 2016. That is why it was a collective effort. There was still a familial feeling to it with the Cell, with still the Fertitta brothers. Dana was still obviously a very polarizing figure still then, but I think that most people are still rooting for success because he hadn't taken it where he said he wanted to by this point. There was so much going on, but that's why it's like, if we get anything like 2016, it would have to be a complete, you know, you're going to have some forces that are on the come up. Because the optimism, the faith that was about to pay off, and everything that came through with that all came into play at once. Whereas in these days, you know, there's a lot of hate surrounding the UFC. The social media has made, you know, the thing very toxic in a lot of ways. The political things that are happening, the White House event could end up becoming like one of those things where you're like, ooh, that was a gross thing to have partaken in. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you don't know how it's going to go. But I tell you what. If we can be optimistic and live in that for the rest of 2025 and hopeful that 2026 is anything like that, I'm with it, man.
Yeah, yeah. And let's just before, and I do, we are going to meticulously break down each one of these fights. But on the whole, right, like I'm just saying, right, like before we get into each one, let's take all scrutiny off the table for us. Just direct question. If Alex and John Jones happen, if Tom and Francis Ngannou happens, if McGregor returns, if Rousey returns, if Ilya and Paddy happens, without getting into the weeds too much, do you think that could, in fact, put it up to 2016?
I think it would be close because, because you have some of the names that are coming up. The big magic thing, like I mentioned, was that McGregor was at that time, I believe, only 27.
Yeah.
We didn't know. We were still, half of the enthrallment was just like, hey, how far can he take it? Where is he taking this thing? And obviously it ended up being the Mayweather fight the following year, but Ronda Rousey was kind of already on the outs. I think a lot of people had kind of turned on her, but it was also at that point that you're like, hey, she could come back. There was still like she did come back that year, but like she could come back and reclaim something. I don't think too many of us were optimistic, but the casual audience thought that, right? So you still had these people whose futures you could still kind of get behind and be like, man, who knows? There's just so much world left for them to explore. And I think that you got a couple of those names in what you're talking about. The only problem is a lot of what you're talking about is the opposite. Like, because now you're talking about Ronda coming back. What is she, 38? You get McGregor coming back, 37, and he's got, you know, court documents stacked up taller than him. You know what I mean? Like, he's got a record, and you got, and I don't know how much that plays in. That will still be big. John Jones coming back, but you're like, he really voluntarily left in a most frustrating way, and it's very fresh on everybody's minds. I do think the matchup in that you're talking about is what we're trying to get at, the aura, right? Because if you're talking about him against Alex Pereira, that's about as good as it gets. I swear, that is about as good as it gets. If you're talking about Tom Aspinall against Jones, let's just say that Jones won't do it, and you're talking about, you know, Aspinall against Francis, about as good as it can get. So, like, if you put those elements into it, that's what really makes it, because then you're like, it's not like you're going to be like, oh, what's the future for Francis Ngannou? It's so huge. It's not the same kind of thing, but it's how rare do you get two fighters coming together who are that indestructible at the same time? And that's really what we hope for. Even Paddy versus Ilya, I think I've been preaching this for the last year. It's like, that was way more magnitude than people realize. Now it actually, I think people get it, but to get that fight and both guys still intact, I mean, that would be a beautiful lead up.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. I think best way of looking at this is like, let's try and frame it from like what's most likely, what's least likely. First thing you mentioned was the returns of Rousey and the returns of McGregor. And for me, I am very skeptical about both. Even
McGregor when, still, huh?
Yeah. I'm sticking to my guns with this one. But even on the Rousey part, we all spoke about this earlier in the week when Ariel Forrest did his great sermon about how this will go. And we're all kind of weighing in briefly on it. And I felt my energy and my forecast on her return was a lot more negative than the other guys. Like Rick, who in fairness has form with Ronda Rousey, we should highlight that, yes, he did in fact vote for her as comeback of the year.
I mentioned comeback that earlier. Fighter of the year. It went right by you, but I did mention this earlier.
Oh, sorry. Again, he might have a more positive outlook on Rousey. But I don't even think, and it's not based on just the Nunes fight when she came back. It's not just based on how she acted with the media completely freezing everybody out. I think the sport has moved on tremendously since then. And even though she was top of the food chain at that time, she hasn't gone near a fight in 9 years, nearly 10 years if she comes back next year. I don't think she can fight anyone in a meaningful fight and win. And so outside of her coming back and just using the Rousey name, I don't know what's in this for the fan base for me.
So you don't think she'll be competitive, you mean? Like against against a worthy name? Like I agree with you 100%. It was not like the way she went out. People talk about like, oh, somebody got exposed. They've used this for years. It drives me crazy fraud checked, all this stuff. Unfortunately, in the Ronda case, there was a little bit stronger version of that, right? Because not me and you, right? We would never do this. But like, there was national media. There was big media who was, you know, trying to pit her against Floyd Mayweather. You know, you had Dana White was like, hey, if they're in an MMA cage, Ronda would kill him, you know? I mean, we were talking in these ways that you're just like, okay, we've put her on a pedestal now that is almost impossible to live up to. In a weird way, it was unfair to her. But she loses to Holly Holm in a way that was, you know, she got pretty outclassed there in the end. And like, she gets knocked out. But it was really that Amanda fight, because you had all of that time in between. You're like, if she's going to come back, guns blazing, the competitor, the things that we have lionized about her, like that, just to put her back in that situation, she'll come back for that fight. Savage, ready, and she just got destroyed. So the fact was that the way she checked out looked worse and worse. And so when you talk about exposed, I think that was kind of the way that people saw it. And I think the petulance that kind of filled the air from that year, you know, in between, it was like a year-long sulk that she went on. And it was like it was really crazy, because I think we'd held her up in this high standard, even on that level of just being this this person who was coming in and, you know, getting girls in, open the doors for the women in the fight game, breaking down barriers all over this, and just kind of championing so much, and then doesn't know how to lose. That really didn't help. But I'm curious. I guess the biggest thing for me would be, what's the reception? You know, like, I feel like there's just such hatred. So, like, I guess the biggest curiosity to me is, can she even gain back an ounce of that? Or would it just feel completely dead on arrival when she shows back up in the UFC? I don't know how that flares up. We know that Conor, there will be a fanfare. There'll be the same old circus will surround him. And, like, all of a sudden it's going to feel like a Conor McGregor fight. I'm not sure what it looks like with Rousey. So there's a curiosity, I guess, that comes along with her.
Yeah. And to my point earlier about, you know, I don't think a matchup per se could drive her return. Even though, in fairness, some people have suggested Gina Carano, someone like that coming back, which, like, you know, she is a celebrity. She's a massive name, one of the kind of pioneers of women's MMA.
Misha I do Tate, think she people, could be Gina. I think she could be Gina.
There's also, like, Misha Tate, people like this. But to your point and mine, this has to be a media-driven exercise if she comes back. And she doesn't seem like she's up for that at all. Mm-mm. Like it's particularly about fighting and you know, I agree with you. I was completely on the Rousey Kool-Aid. And then to hear that she thinks that we're all just waiting to shit all over at any point, I was like, wow, I didn't really feel that at all, particularly from the MMA media. So that's where my shortcomings are with her. How would it be? But the McGregor thing's different. As you said, like, we know this guy is a huge celebrity. We know people are going to watch him fighting more than anyone in the UFC. Like that's a fact. That's, he has all these pay-per-view records. It's a different kind of cynicism I have with it, with McGregor. And obviously, he's just been, he has that retroactive suspension due to failing to give his location, one of which appeared to be the day before that cancelled press conference with Michael Chandler, interesting enough. My skepticism with him, Chuck, is about getting through a fight camp.
That's what,
it's about
with you.
Lifestyle, you know, like, I think he has been enjoying himself quite visibly for the last while, and it does not look like a man who can really put himself through a camp at this point. So I have the same level of skepticism when it comes to McGregor as Dana White has for John Jones, I'd say.
Wow. You know what I'm saying? So you put at 1 in 1 billion. What did Dana give the odds at for John Jones?
I didn't know he gave a line.
He gave the kind of line where the value is actually to bet that the underdog in that situation. No, you've been so right about this that I almost don't want to dispute you, because
please do.
I will dispute you in the sense that at some point you got to save face, right? Like, he's just been kind of he's been in this sphere for a long time, the space where he's going to come back. He's kept his name relevant, but then it does start to kind of go into, a comedy at some point that you're like, yeah, sure, you're coming back, you know? And I think we've went into that space a long time ago. A lot of people don't really look at him as a real fighter. There are people who come into the sport long after, you know, since his last fight. And I think they don't even know what to make of Conor McGregor. They just are curious. They're just kind of he's a curiosity because they don't know anything about it. They don't even know why he's transcendent, you know, at this point. They just know that people have seen him that way at some point in his career. It's a very bizarre situation. And especially when he starts throwing out, I guess, negotiations, numbers, let's start getting down to the number. And you're like, okay, wait a minute. Because really the biggest thing is, are you going to be able to fight? I mean, and you pointed this out for a long time. You've pointed this out, man. Like, until you see him making that walk, you're not, you know, you might be skeptical. And you pointed out the very reason being, can he make it through a camp? And I really think that's ties into the lifestyle. And it's not just, I mean, you could point out all the substances, all the things that have been going on, man, the nightlife. But it's also that he just likes to be seen, man. He likes to be out. Like, even if he was sober and all of, you know, all these things, is he going to be able to just, like, pack it in and stay in one place, you know, for any amount of time and, like, put a genuine focus on a guy and kind of fuel some kind of hunger that long ago existed? We know that for a fact, but, like, is it still there? Can he even find that center in him anymore? I mean, there is so much that goes into it. Not to mention, least of all, the injury that he suffered and where's his body at as he's enters his late 30s and all that stuff. I mean, there's a lot of big ifs to that. So I want to be less skeptical, but I guess that I have a natural skepticism with him that comes with all the things we've talked about in the past, and especially in a big spot like this.
Yeah. And as well as that, like, just in terms of, like, and I don't, like, I'm not trying to cast any judgment on the man for this, like, the stress in his life, Like, man, he is in court case after court case. He has one that's been pushed back to December in the U.S. stemming from that Miami. Remember, he was at the Heat game?
Yeah.
So that's one. I think that's a...
This isn't activation. Even the mascot. This is the assault.
It's a sexual assault on some woman in a bathroom. Alleged assault, should we say. And then he's also going... He's talking about bringing his sexual assault civil case loss in Ireland. He's already lost in the Court of Appeal to that. But he's talking about bringing that to the Supreme Court now. So, this is some high-level shit. Like, this is not like, oh, yeah, let's hope this gets sorted in the background. Like, this is all-consuming stress in people's lives when this kind of stuff is going down, which I think isn't conducive to a good fight camp either. But let's try and be more at least
he withdrew his name from the Irish presidency. I mean, that's one thing off his plate.
Yeah, I mean, we're all devastated over here.
I'm sure. See you beaming over there.
But oh man, the just for a note on the presidential journey here in Ireland, a lad has been run out of the game. Like, a lad who was favourite, Jim Gavin, the former Dublin football coach, has been taken out of the proceedings because it turns out he owed a former tenant of his, because he's a landlord, €3,000. That's ruined him. Like, he's gone. Like,
wow.
People are like, get him fucking out of there. We don't want anything of him. I'm like, do you realize...
That's a Tuesday morning in February for Connor, you know? That's...
Do you know what I mean? It's fairly, like, the scrutiny, levels of scrutiny are far worse than even we're giving Ariel Helwani here. I'm going to... My most positive note of all Ariel's forecasts is the Ilia V. Paddy fight. I think, like, if I was going to say what is the most likely thing to happen there, that would be mine.
So you had a bigger list than you've went down here. There were others, right?
There was John Jones, okay. Alex Pereira. There was Tom Aspinall.
I mean, I want that one more than anything, to be honest.
This is not about wanting. This is about reality, Chuck, okay? We're here to scrutinize Ariel Helwani.
Put in my veins, as they say. But yeah, we'll stick to scrutinizing Helwani. I do think that could happen, right? Like that I think that that's the one, and I think the UFC would love to see that one happen. I think Ilya would love to see that one happen. Paddy, so you almost have all parties involved that would be like, yeah, sure, let's do this thing.
Yes.
I feel like that's just a win-win for everyone, right? And it would be, I have to say, man, maybe I'm drinking the Paddy Coke. He's been so kind of dismissed through his career. This would be a fascinating thing for him. Now imagine if he goes in there and beats the great Ilya Topuria, who I think is either one or two on our pound-for-pound rankings.
I think
Is he number one? So imagine him doing that. Guys like just smoked all these legends, and all of a sudden here's Paddy Pimblett, who everybody dismissed through every stop of his career, gets to this big moment and blows it. You want to talk about, I don't know if it'd be Conor McGregor, Stentorian Big, like where it's just, but it would be something like that given those circumstances. I think that would be enormous, like crazy. That would get us to 2016 vibes. I'm telling you, man, that would be huge.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he's the guy that has the UK completely switch on to MMA again. In Liverpool, he's been a celebrity since he's a kid, basically.
Yeah.
And that was why it was so tumultuous for him on the way up. Like, can you imagine a place like Liverpool where they really get behind their guys? This guy is just walking through the streets every day. Like, people are pulling out of him and dragging out of him. It's a miracle that he even got here, honestly. Like I used to say to Paddy all the time, if I was as famous as you were when you were 21, I'd be dead. And I really mean that. I genuinely mean that. Like, it's impossible. It's impossible to live in a situation like that.
Just kind of made for it, you know?
Yes.
Like, some people just wake up and they're fine with that kind of thing. And other people are like, oh my God, there's no way I could have handled that. And I think I'm in the camp with you. There's no way I could have handled that much, you know, attention, scrutiny, all of those things, and still come out on the other side looking good, or like that you have your better half still to go.
And could you imagine the amount of free booze and drugs you'd be given? Like, I'd be dead. Like, I'd be dead after 2 days. I'd be like, what's that? Yes, I will have some.
The bigger concern is, like, you know, chefs sending out their best specials for him, right? Or like the diner, the short order cook sending him those extra pancakes. That's the problem with him.
He's on Just Eat or whatever one of them food apps. And he's like, I can afford everything. Should we just get everything?
And he wants it all, man.
You're right in terms of, like, the two most amazing things on this list are Pereira v. Jones and Tom v. Ngannou.
Now, wasn't there some other things? Like, you sent me a list. Wasn't there some other fights? Or was this...
No, this is it. We've hit them all.
Okay.
Ilia V. Paddy, return of Rousey, return of McGregor, Tom v. Francis, and Alex v. John.
I thought there was, like, I thought there was like, you know, Amanda versus Kayla. Or these are ones that should happen anyway, right? But I was like, I thought maybe these were just kind of stragglers that that I looked at.
These aren't the pie in the sky ones. Kayla and Amanda is run the mill compared to this shit, okay?
That's true. I'm not disputing it.
I feel bad for Tom Aspinall. And I wonder, like, you know, because this, it feels like everyone is suddenly like, Alex is now fighting John Jones. And I'm like, wasn't our whole issue with this that he had to fight Tom? And then Pereira just knocks Ankalaev out and everyone's like, yeah, it's John Jones v. Alex Pereira. Alex wants it.
Man.
Can he complain?
I mean, this is just, our sport, man, it just does this like so much. But I have to admit, you know, I was sitting there cage side when Pereira was knocking him out. And I mean, that place was, it's been a while since I've heard a place that loud. It was so loud in there, like piercing as this was happening. And as he gets up, I looked over at the guy sitting next to me for and I immediately was like, that John Jones fight would be huge, you know?
Straight away you say this. Straight away.
It's like two, it's not even a minute fresh in my mind. Oh, unfortunately, that's just kind of how it always goes, man. I mean, but, you know, part of it, I think, for Tom is just kind of getting a fight in again, reminding everybody that, you know, he's who he is. Like, he's been brushed to the side for so long that it's like you almost have to stay relevant by getting a fight again.
Yeah. I feel like, you see, this is why I think the Francis part of this is important. I feel like they need to appease Aspinall if they're going to go for this Pereira v. Jones thing. Like, you can't just be like, and you're going to be fighting Volkov in August again. You know, like, it's and Ariel's argument is also
Dontell
like,
Mays coming up to
Dontell Mays has got his way up, baby. He's on a 2-fight win streak and he wants your blood. Helwani, in fairness to him, I think one thing that makes sense but is also a bit wishful is like, if Jones and Pereira fight, it's going to be a heavyweight. And I believe the expression he used at the time was like, a rising tide lifts all ships. If Pereira and John Jones are in the heavyweight division, that's good news for Tom Aspinall. But my problem is, John Jones could just go in and beat Alex Pereira and be like, I'm retired again. See you later. So I can't quite.
And I mean, if I'm Dana White, I'm fully like, so if you know you're just doing a one-off, if this is a one-off, we're going to do Alex Pereira and John Jones. Okay, fine. But that is traditionally not how Dana White likes to think. Now, I know that these times are very different, and you're talking about, especially if this is a White House event, who knows, you know, what exceptions will be made. But generally speaking, if you have a fight of that magnitude, of guys who really are at the top, because John hasn't lost, you know, it's not like he's, you know, it's not like he's in some twilight where he's just like, give me one more fight. I know I've lost a couple in a row or something like that. This dude has still got the sheen of his invincibility after all these years. And you got Alex Pereira, who's like three times has claimed UFC gold and like wins it back in this one. I mean, you would want there to be a future coming out of that fight. Something has to, right? So if John Jones goes through him, you would almost need the assurance that, hey, man, you're going to have to fight Tom Aspinall. Like you would really want that to be the case, or Francis Ngannou, if that was the case. But can you imagine if that was really the little kind of four-man tournament that broke out? I mean, that would be the biggest. I can't think of anything that could be bigger than that. Yeah. Because of where these guys have come from and the journeys they've had to get there, I just can't think of anything that would be bigger. And also, you're talking about a glam weight class that for a long time has been dormant in ways that lack this kind of imagination. But if you were to suddenly have Francis Ngannou returning, John Jones back, you know, and you've got Tom Aspinall, the guy that, you know, has the chip on his shoulder, who should be able to beat them all because he's like, you know, and then you've got Alex Pereira coming up, who's the, I mean, imagine that. Can you even just begin to imagine how that would seem?
No, and you're right. Like, if you know what, even without Rousey McGregor, if they got, like, so what did he say? 60%. If 60% of this comes through. So if that was the 60%, if it's Ilya v. Paddy. Yeah, if it's Ilya v. Paddy, and it's Alex, John, and Tom and Ngannou. I think it's achieved, right?
Yeah.
Or do you need McGregor and Rousey?
No, you don't. I think that those are the two that are expendable. Because I think that what you're basing 2016, and I don't mean to like keep pounding this home. I don't know if we can replicate it from the sense that we were all in it together in 2016. All of us. We were all trying to lift it to a place, still see it off, and there goes our baby. You know, that was our thing. It's not the same setup, but it would feel in a resurrection sense like you had some of those elements back in place, yes. Because you would have these people who's, you know, like where they have their futures are in front of them. What happens next? Where's this all head? You know, I think that those storylines, those all make sense. You don't necessarily need McGregor or a Rousey for that.
Yeah. And look, the image of, what is it, 36th around Penn Station there outside Madison Square Garden, the images of walking out of that event, the Alvarez McGregor event, and just seeing seas of people in every direction, down the block, like literally shut down all around that arena for about 30 minutes.
Do you remember? Were you with us?
I wasn't with MMA Fight, and I was about to join.
Okay. Because we did this MMA fight. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We did the MMA fighting like pre-show, which to this day is just a hilarious, like, non-existent thing. I mean, it exists, but the crowd descended on us. It was me. I think it was Mark Raimondi.
It was
Ariel Helwani, and the crowd descended on us, and all it is like, I don't know how many minutes of just chaos where he's just trying to get the microphone back to one of us so we can make a prediction. And as soon as that prediction is made again, it's a swarm and everybody just goes off. It was such a mad scene. I don't know if we could ever do that again. That was at the height of passion for this sport, you know? And that was a lot of Irish passion. They, you know, that was a big part because of that.
Yeah. A lot of buyer's remorse there. the Emerald Isle these days. Listen, we've got to go for a break, but we're going to come back and speak about another development that could shape 2026, which is Eddie Hearn, the great boxing promoter, tickling our balls about a potential entry into the world of MMA, backed by none other than Turki Alashik. We're going to go for two, and we'll be back to speak about all this wonderful stuff. So we will see you then, my loves. And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Myself and Chuck Mendenhall have just broken down and scrutinized our good friend Ariel Helwani's positive look for 2026. And, you know, it turns out we kind of agree with him. But there is more things to factor into this potentially very interesting 2026. And can I just say, Mr. Eddie Hearn showed up on Ariel's show on Wednesday in studio looking fantastic, looking like 007 as usual. But the amount of texts I've got from fighters based off this interview is pretty fucking crazy. He said a lot of things, including stuff pertaining to revenue splits, you know, lambasted the UFC's payment to fighters, potentially said, like, you know, Dana White will not be able to beat him in the world of boxing. Probably the biggest takeaway came when he suggested that he is considering a transition of his own, on Air Jordan, if you will.
What time does the UFC fighter go, hang on a minute, how much money is in the pot here? You kind of need me, don't you? I mean, I'm the talent. Without me, do you even have a show? Yeah, maybe you can put someone else on. But I've just sold this arena out. I'm just racking you up 400,000 or 500,000 pay-per-view buys. I'd like to actually see, you know, that's when we get a fighter of that size and magnitude, like Anthony Joshua, we'll go, you own the show. So you imagine you said to a star in the UFC, right, it's your show. And we're going to have open book. And you're going to take 80% of the profit of the show. And we take 20%. Imagine how much the UFC fighters would be making.
Imagine. This lad, Chuck. This lad.
You know we could only see Eddie in that shot. But you know who was sitting there like, Ariel.
And me at home.
He loves it, man. He loves it. I mean, that's some. So we've heard things like this in the past, right? Like you hear guys come in, they're going to do these things or flirt with the UFC or not UFC, MMA. They do these things. There's always just an automatic, instantaneous like level of skepticism about it because you're like, dude, you don't get it, man. You don't get it. You don't know what you're up against. The business is harder than you think. And Dana White is more ruthless than you think. Like all of these things will come into play. And if you want it again and you won't, you know, there is something different about that because this is a dude who does know what he's doing, and he knows a different model, and he knows how to do it so that it works. He also speaks fighter language. There's a lot to that, that like when you hear it and you're like, you know, I don't know. It's like, it's almost like somebody standing up to a bully, a longtime bully. And you're like, oh, wait a minute now. Cause this guy's been training. And you're like, this, I think he can beat that bully. You know, it's one of those type of situations. Obviously, like it's a whole different kettle of fish when you get to MMA. And, if that were to happen, it would not be as seamless, you know, as maybe everybody would hope, but I do think that's something to pay attention to.
Absolutely. And like, you know, I'm not messing, like so many fighters onto me yesterday, coaches, everything. And it's just an interesting battle. Like Eddie Hearn and Dana White are two very different guys. Like if we're looking at this like a fight, like if it's a styles matchup in terms of promotions, you have Dana White, who is archetypal bully, like is saying on 60 Minutes last week, he's as proud to be loyal as he is to be a bully. Basically, they're like, two words to describe you. One's loyal, one's a bully. And he's like, yeah, I love it. I love this shit. Ugh. He is the biggest dog on the playground. Do you know, like he's the guy, if you're in school and you look at Dana White, you're like, yeah, I'm not fucking with that guy. Eddie Hearn's very different. He is smiling. He is very approachable. He does every interview in the sun, doesn't block anyone else, but he will smile as he cuts your throat. Like, these two guys are promoters. Neither of these guys is like, one of them's a really ethical guy. The other one isn't. Like, these are both lads who know how to sell shit. Dude. And just the matchup is so intriguing to me, you know?
Yeah. Maybe that's the biggest fight of 2026.
Maybe it fucking is.
Dana needs it. I don't really love complacency of what I see. You know, I was at this fight card out in Vegas last weekend. And I mean, I just remember a time when I would see, you'd see Dana White and he would be, you know, mostly kind of talking to fans. And he's going to do his glad handing with some of the people around there. But just this, you know, this version of him that's won. Well, I've already won, you know.
Yes.
Walking around. And, you know, he's got like so many power players around him. Nobody should, you know, I just don't, he was at his best when he felt threatened. And I'm like, so at some point, I hope it happens because I don't really, I mean, there's something about like him being complacent and just, you know, that 60 Minutes interview you pointed out is just such a perfect example of the thing that was raised and what it became. And now I'm like, okay, well, what happens when it doesn't seem so easy again? You know, is that competitive fire there? So it's similar to what we're talking about with Connor. Like, is he going to be able to revert into this this guy who can, you know, play that kind of mental chess and like business chess against a guy who knows what he's doing? It would be, to me, I'm like, I guess there's something about it that you're rattling a cage that hasn't been rattled for a long time. Ever since Dana White went into whatever he said in his cabin and counted as $300 or $400 million after the sale, you know, it's like when he did, once you're doing that, you've already won. And nobody, you know, I think he looks at all threats as like nothing. And that wasn't the Dana White that we knew kind of coming up, right? And I think that there's something to that. Like the Dana White that we knew was like when Affliction was putting on shows and he's like, we'll counter that with Anderson Silva. We'll put Anderson Silva against James Irvin. I mean, those types of things, they became these shrewd business like and just like, you're not going to out-promote me. I think that could be healthy for the sport, to be honest, man, to get some of that back.
It's such a good point. And he is a competitor. Like, but both of these fucking guys compete. Like, they want to be the best, and they've proven that they can be the best. So it's an exceptional, that's such a great way to frame it in terms of like him coming out swinging. Like, I'd love to see that Dana White back. Absolutely. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, Chuck, is it's something that we actually flagged. If you go right back to him speaking about this TKO boxing with Turki Alashik Zuffa boxing, the thing we noted at the time was the payment thing could become a bigger issue based on that. And I really believe that is what's happening here. Like, we just saw that clip of Eddie Hearn kind of lining out like how different boxing works to MMA. I don't know if on air Jordan has it here, but there was also like Mike Tyson, like one of Dana White's heroes, speaking about if he could ever be in the UFC earlier this week. So if we can roll that one, please.
You in your prime, you would have been a UFC fighter or something like that.
Because then I'm, listen,
The biggest UFC, five of the biggest UFC fighters combined couldn't match my pay.
Oh,
that's just
it wasn't worth the pay.
No, I want to be the biggest fighter, the biggest purse. I want all that stuff. Yeah. When Mike Tyson fights, he shuts everything down. The biggest purse.
That's it.
Got a point.
I was actually reading one of Don McRae's Dark Trade, where he's with Tyson, he's with Eubank and all the guys, and the money those lads were getting paid for like events in the UK, like with the likes of Ben and Eubank and then obviously Tyson and the money he was making. Like, this is late 80s, early 90s when he's writing this book, and fucking like the payment in MMA pales in comparison to them. You know, like this is 30 years before. And I also spoke to Mick Conlon last week because it was a previous interview Eddie Hearn had done with Ariel. And he was like, the way he was speaking about it so matter-of-factly from the boxer's point of view. And bear in mind, Mick Conlon is an Irish boxing legend in terms of what he did at amateur, but he only ever challenged for world titles as a professional. Never was a world champion. Not yet, anyway. He is on his third quest for one at the moment. But this guy never fought for a world title. And he was talking figures to me, and it's like, he was saying like Francis Ngannou was fighting for world titles. He was the champion, the baddest man on the planet, and I was getting more money to challenge for a title in Nottingham than he was making for being the baddest man on the planet. Like, has this all just kind of blown up the payment issue for the UFC, do you think, this whole boxing exercise?
I mean, we've had it. We've had this going on for a while. I think that when you get, I guess we kind of outlined this, when you get the Dana White now dipping his toe into the other sphere, like he's now boxing, Zuffa boxing, all this, this will naturally come to the fore. Really, it always comes down to fighter awareness. It's like, I feel like we've talked about it, but the fighters themselves seem reluctant to really do anything about it. But I'm like, if it really comes down to it where it wakes up just some larger notion of like, hey man, we're getting screwed, it would be like, I would be shocked if it didn't on some level, because boxing always produces, you know, these big, like, because of the Ali Act, right? And because of like the promoters basically give so much more of the revenue to the fighter. It's like this whole, it's such a glaring discrepancy that it's shocking that in the year 2025, there aren't more fighters talking about it. I did a big interview with Corey Sandhagen before his fight with Marab this weekend. And, I'd asked him just kind of offhand, like, hey man, are you part of the pay-per-view points, just given that, like, I know you're the co-main, but are you part of that too, because as one of the guys who's fighting for a title? And I don't know how often they would actually do this. Ari would probably be able to correct me right away. Maybe this was a dumb question, but he goes, I don't know if I would get any pay-per-view. And it was almost like, dude, I mean, even if it's a stupid question, you should know that you're not getting, you know, you should know that that's definitely not part of it if it's going to be. And I just feel like that there's a lack of awareness with UFC fighters that certainly doesn't exist with boxers right now. And how those two things over time play out, will boxers start to lose their bearings when it comes to their pay? You know, I doubt it. And it's not going to happen quickly. You know, it's a weird thing, but it's going to be very glaring if the two sports, first of all, fall under one umbrella. And also if you have promoters kind of crossing between the two, it's going to come out. And that's where that Eddie Hearn's 100% right. And I guess that is one of those storylines. Like, if he did come over, wouldn't it just become now the biggest thing? Because it would be very clear, you know, what it looks like if that kind of promoter exists in MMA. You know what I mean? And he gets two big names. It would be very, very interesting, wouldn't it? Because now all of a sudden you have a true, you know, basis for comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it would be so interesting, but it affects so much of the UFC to challenge the structure that they currently have. Because I think we all agree that the company would not be worth what it's worth if the fighters weren't getting paid what they're getting paid. You know, I think that's a given. Yeah. I think it's out there. Like, I don't think the UFC have had the conversation with these guys in terms of what's going to happen. I'm talking about the guys. When I mention the guys, I mean the champions. I don't think they've had that conversation with them in terms of what is going to replace that pay-per-view money that is gone now, essentially, with the Paramount thing. And you're right in terms of like the difference between boxing and MMA. And it only speaks to like how great of a business this is from a capitalist point of view for the UFC. Like, they have these guys exactly where they want them. Like, they are constantly, you can be the best fighter in the world, and we know through Demetrius Johnson, be completely expendable.
Right.
Like, you can just be like, do you know what? Off you go,
true,
man. We don't like the way it's going. And it's like, from a point of view of the board of directors and the people who are making money off this Goliath, which the UFC is, they want to keep this as much as possible because the overheads are insane when you don't have to give these 60 to 70% revenue split, as Eddie Hearn is pointing out with Canelo and the likes of Anthony Joshua and all these people. But one thing, if you watch that Matchroom documentary on Netflix, Eddie Hearn ain't living bad. You know,
no.
Like how much money do you fucking need at the end of the day? You know what I mean? Apparently a lot.
He's got everything, doesn't he? He's got the looks. He's got the money. You know, he's got the life. But he does work hard, man. That's a workaholic right there. He's always out and doing his thing. I don't know, man. I do think that that's some interesting terrain that we're going to have to see, because one of the things the UFC has done, which has always been kind of comical to me, is, you know, they want the world to know, look how successful we've been. Look at this. We're the fastest growing sport in the world. And so, like, when sometimes they get, you know, a big deal or, you know, they sell for $4.2 billion or they do, you know, whatever it is, and they, you know, they get valued at $12 billion or whatever, and it just keeps going. They get new rights deals. They've got ESPN. They had Fox before that. Now they're doing Paramount Plus. You know, it's like each one of these is such a, like, smiting of your chest, but yet, and it comes with an incredible amount of money. And if, like, the NBA, obviously, like, so they can work the new deal with ESPN, that means a lot to a lot of people.
Yes.
Straight down to the water boys. But I'm like, in fighting, you know, it's just the overlords kind of doing a victory lap. I don't really, it's the craziest dynamic.
Can we get the bonuses up to 100,000?
I know. We still have people, this happened a couple times in Vegas, this last one, who are like, 50 G's, man, let's give me the 50 G's. And I'm like, this is crazy that people are still using their Joe Rogan mic moment to be like, hey, man, can you kick me a little extra money for that? You know,
I want to put a down payment on a home.
I know.
You're trying to get out of,
trying to quit the garage job, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Like, it's crazy. I wanted to just wait. Like, one thing that's, when Ariel says things like this, you have to look at it with the understanding that this man is hearing more than any of us,
oh, yeah,
about what's going on. And we often used to do this with the Ringer MMA show when we were doing that. When he'd make his predictions for the next year, we'd be like, what does this mean?
All right,
mean?
What does he know? What does he know? Yeah. Who's he talking to?
So I see him make this prediction. I see him, you know, Ngannou, McGregor, Rousey. McGregor, Rousey, fairly, like, you know, straightforward. We see Rousey hitting the pads. McGregor is saying he's back for the White House thing. The Ngannou piece was like, I was like, I don't know where he's getting that. Is this just simply to appease Tom Aspinall? Like, as in, we're not forgetting about you, Tom, and you'll fight Francis Ngannou.
Love you, Tommy.
And, yes. Yep. But when it started making the sense to me was when I saw Eddie Hearn come on his show. And Eddie Hearn is talking about Turki Al-Sheikh saying to him that you should get into MMA. And then suddenly my mind is cast back to this prediction he's made with Francis Ngannou. And then my mind's going back maybe a month or so when Francis Ngannou was on the show. And Francis Ngannou said that he either have one fight or a term left on this deal with PFL. I believe he is the most important part of the jigsaw here. If Hearn is getting into MMA, mm-hmm, with Turki Al-Sheikh, I honestly believe that they need someone like Francis Ngannou to launch that ship if they're going to do it. And for that exact reason, that makes him far more of a commodity to the UFC. Like, as in, the only way I can see the UFC going for Francis Ngannou at this stage is to block someone else challenging them. And then suddenly that starts to make sense for me. Of course the UFC would move on Francis Ngannou and give Tom Aspinall that fight if they thought for a second that Eddie Hearn was going to launch an MMA promotion,
right,
with Turki Al-Sheikh.
This is now, what this I is, mean. This is what
this
I mean,
is speculative,
though,
right? Like, yeah. But that's how I feel. Like, I feel if they were going to do this, Francis Ngannou would be the centerpiece, or at least attempt to make him the centerpiece, and therefore the UFC would have to go and get him.
We're speaking the same language, man. I'm like, this is what I'm saying about Dana. Like, maybe a Hearn presence or threat to join, you know, or come over would actually galvanize. Because right now, Dana can just be like, I don't like the guy. And yes. It's as simple as that. And he doesn't have to do a damn thing about it. And people are just like, okay, well, Francis, you know, he burnt his bridge, you know, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, dude, you don't think people want to see him fight, you know? And I think that that would kick something into, you know, that type of scenario might kick, might repair that bridge or whatever the hell's going on. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that would definitely have people singing a different tune as all. So I'm with you 100%. We speculate on these things and then nothing happens sometimes. And I'm like a little bummed because I start to believe what I want to believe. So I hope that, I hope it's true. I hope like these things happen. The greatest thing that could happen is them to have this magic moment we were talking about with this heavyweight division. You know, yeah. I think that, I don't think it's ever existed. I mean, the times where we've had, you know, clear, like, hope, I guess, for big things. It was, like, with Fedor, and they couldn't get a deal done. They couldn't bring him over. So you had, like, some of these guys that they just left forever in speculation. Like, I don't know what happens if Brock fought, you know, him at the time and all this stuff. I just want one time where they're like, no, man, we got all of them. We're going to do all of this at once. That would be so crazy to me. And it would really be a return to something about the UFC, like, kind of on a promise. Of putting the best fights, putting the best fighters and all of that. It would be like this kind of honoring of like some system that forever ago was broken, you know? But it would kind of bring it full circle back to that, wouldn't it? It would just be a great thing.
Man, I'm so with you right now. Like, we started off like, oh, let's scrutinize this. And now, like, an hour later, we're like, whoa, this is going to be amazing.
Another thing I love that Helwani said was this.
Got me again, motherfucker.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's all very, very.
But what's
exciting.
Up with this turkey? Like, just kind of collecting toys on both sides now. It's like, that's crazy.
He is such an agent of chaos. It's unbelievable.
Shit stir.
For many reasons.
Yeah,
I mean, outside of sport too.
Wait, no. What did Hearn say? He's like,
he loves the fuckery.
He loves the fuckery. I think he's right about that.
But I do feel as though, like, he wants, like, I think he has fun being the master of puppets.
Sure.
And I do feel like. Yeah. Dana's possibly rubbed him up the wrong way. And what, like, from his point of view, with this enormous wealth, what is a funnier thing to do? Like, what is a more entertaining thing for him to do? Like, he's already...
Right, he wanted to make an announcement at the UFC 319. He was like, Dana will make this announcement now. As soon as he got shut down, game changed, man. The game changed.
Man, that's what I'm thinking, too. I'd go back to that moment. It's like, that's all it takes, and I will come after your whole fucking legacy.
He's like, oh, you think you're as powerful as me? You know?
Man, we are headed for a fucking war of worlds here. It's absolutely crazy. We have a few things.
We're just hyping some bullshit that doesn't even exist now.
I mean, isn't it worth it to get excited about it, though? Man. Like, it's. I'm fucking buzzing
it
about
it. Beats
this
the
shit.
Normal crack when we're like, so what do we think's next for Connor after this last court date?
Peter, he's running for presidency. How do the people of Ireland feel? No pressure. We have a few things to wrap up on the back end. We're going to hit you with an ad break now, but we'll be back to speak about Ice Wars, Chuck's favorite. Ooh. Maybe a bit about, was Hughes v. Usman promoted the way it should have been? Paul Hughes didn't seem to think so when he was on Ireland's show earlier this week. And we will finish off by taking a brief look at the Brazil card this weekend that the boys in black so wonderfully broke down yesterday. So we'll be back after this. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We didn't forget that the break was ending there and just talk about NFL for 2 minutes solid. That's something we definitely didn't do. I was
saying that Petey should go. He's so close to London. I'm like, go see the Denver Broncos take on the, who they playing? New York Jets?
Are they playing the Jets over there?
Yeah, they're playing
the
Jets.
You know that on Air Jordan.
No, they're playing the Jets.
Oh, they're playing the
Jets. Go check it out, man.
I hear that on Air Jordan doesn't really like the Jets anymore because Aaron Rodgers doesn't play for them. He just kind of was like, oh, yeah, there you go. The fact. Well, I think
0-5 tends to do that. I mean,
I wanted to ask you, Chuck, because we didn't have you on last weekend. I was forced to get the Brazilian Beast on and my Irish duo to form the Trident of Knowledge. But Hughes v. Usman was last week, and one thing without getting into the scorecards, we've talked about this all week.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that Hughes said when he came on Ariel's show on Wednesday was, and I honestly feel in particularly
this is to do with the U.S. audience, because we were doing the show last week. People didn't know the fight was on. People didn't know where to watch the fight. He kind of said, like, it was disappointing to be, like, on fight week and have people still reaching out to you going, like, when is this? Is this this week? And how do I watch this fight? Like, do you think they may have fumbled the bag a bit in terms of what this fight meant, how tuned in a lot of people were to a rematch happening, and then maybe not promoting it to the level it deserved on fight week?
It felt like it fell straight to the diehards out here. Like, it did not feel like it could even possibly be a casual event. I just happened to be in Vegas with some guys in town, an annual trip. That's why I went to the UFC fights. And as they were coming, I'm like, oh yeah, we got to go watch this fight. And could not find it. Like, you know.
Wow. So,
and I mean, you're in a, like, some of the, we went to a couple of sports book type things where they have just everything on, you know. That's pretty sad. You know, wow, you should be able to watch. Cool. Yeah, you should be able to watch a fight of that magnitude, especially when it means something to what we considered. And I mean, I guess it's still the case, right? PFL being the second by default at this point, like, maybe they haven't been as big as we'd hope. Maybe things haven't worked out. But still, you have a rematch of a fight of the year that really carried that kind of import. It was a little disheartening, man, I got to say. So I don't know. Who'd you say was complaining about it? Hughes?
Hughes.
Because I think he's dead on right. I think he's dead on right. I don't think they made that too easy on us at all.
Yeah, it's tough, man, because the fight was great, but everything beyond the fight seems to just obscure them a little bit more with the fan base. Like, it's the scorecards, it's the officiating, it's just the lack of promotion. As you're kind of speaking to there, I just feel like with a fight like that, when you've got everyone buzzing for it, it just failed to make the imprint it should have. And you kind of don't walk away. And maybe this is me speaking from an Irish point of view, but I don't think it is, in terms of, I saw so much reaction to the cards, so much reaction to how everything played out. You just kind of feel like you had such an opportunity there and we're coming away with, like, I don't think you've built this brand. I don't think you've got more people on the PFL train, which an event like this really should be for, you know?
Dude, there was their big event last year, October, right? It was in October when Francis Ngannou fought. It was Chris Cyborg.
Yes.
Chris Cyborg is just now, you know, it took him forever. And we do these rankings, right? Like, we do these pound-for-pound rankings, and they've got a couple of fighters that are always on there. It's like just, they're kind of staples. One of them being Larissa, is it Pacheco?
How does she? Yeah.
Yeah, so she's, and I keep posting on there, as I write these things, like, you know, alert, if anybody hears from Larissa Pacheco, please let us know. You know, it's like she's fallen off the face of the earth since she fought. And I'm like, this shouldn't happen. And it's not just a matter of matchmaking. It's just keep your fighters in the, like, somewhere in the headlines, or, like, give them some relevancy through the time. Like, give them some kind of push. Very weird, man. It is very weird what happens over there.
Yeah, well, hopefully things can pick up, I guess. So listen, one promotion that is having no trouble whatsoever, Chuck, this has been championed by you for a long time.
Yeah, I guess I'm the only one, PT.
But tell us, I believe Ice Wars is back, baby.
Ice Wars is back tonight in Sunrise, Florida. They're the I think, Amarant Arena. It's the same arena where the Florida Panthers play. So this is a huge, like, kind of step up. Yeah, this is an NHL arena. It's a huge step up for them. The first couple that they did, kind of in a soft launch sense, was in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, and then somewhere, I think it was in Calgary or in Edmonton. They did, like, another type of casino up there. They weren't sanctioned. They were wearing gloves, so they weren't really dropping the gloves. So they were fighting with MMA gloves, which didn't make sense to me, really. And then they were also fighting and skating on synthetic ice rather than real ice. All of that's been rectified. So I guess, in my morbid curiosity, because I was at the one in Michigan, and I had a great time with it. I guess I saw the potential because I keep talking about it. So I'm anxious to see how this all pans out on real ice. You know what I mean? Given that now they're going to drop the gloves, they're going to be bare knuckle since they're affiliated to bare knuckle.
Well,
anyway,
that was important, I feel.
That was
feel
important.
Like that, yeah.
So now I feel like we'll finally see, you know, how that's going to look in their intended form. And they've got all their big guns out. Even Charles Rosa, you know, the former UFC guy, is on the card. He's fighting somebody because he was a hockey player first. They've got all kinds of names. The Laporte brothers, who like the twins who I pointed out before in the pieces I wrote, are both on the card. One of them, Nick, is headlining it. It should be fun, man.
No. Uh-oh. He was just pitching Ice Wars. Why do you do this, Internet gods? He was just telling us about the ice hockey lads beating the piss out of each other, and he suddenly freezes on the crack. I mean, it's very disappointing. I'm looking at him now. I know you guys can't see him, but I'm looking at Chuck Mendenhall, frozen in time, full of enthusiasm, speaking about his beautiful Ice Wars, which returns this week. It is, of course, an affiliate of BKFC, and they will be, of course, using their bare knuckles this time around. Of course, we have Charlie Olives this weekend as well. He is fighting Gamrot, and as I said to you guys yesterday, if you are looking for a preview of this fight, get over to the Boys in the Back, our Thursday show over here. They did a wonderful breakdown of it. You know, if any of you saw a headline this morning that said, Oliveira misses weight by 9 pounds, fear not. It is a different Oliveira, Simon Oliveira, who came in at 144 pounds for his fight win with Luan Lacerda. It is a very Brazilian-focused card. Hang on. Do I see the beautiful Chuck Mendenhall back? Chuck!
And if they can get by that kind of thing in the Ice Wars, I really think that this could be the big... I can't even believe I just said that publicly.
It was outlandish. We actually had the censor him. That was nothing to do with the internet. That was on-air Jordan just like, cut him off!
Trying to avoid the lawsuit. Sorry, fellas. I don't know what happened there. I could hear you saying you lost me, but I could not respond. Sorry about that.
Listen. We took it over. I did a very brief UFC Rio. Are we gonna get? You see, one thing I will say about Ice Wars, the feature, like, you know, that's what we need from this, because you were sitting beside fucking Tommy Hearns the last time.
Last time, yeah.
Hitman Tommy Hearns. Who are they gonna put beside Mendenhall this week? I mean, they.
Well,
they
I won't need be to... there. I can't. I'm not gonna be there. I wanted to go. It's tonight. I mean, what am I gonna do?
Do you know what I just realized?
What?
Ben Folks has been in the waiting room for an hour and a half.
We should probably... Oh. It's a little late in the game to bring him in now.
Listen, Ben, next week, mate. Next week. I can't apologize enough. This is so embarrassing.
Poor guy.
Is he still in there, Jordan?
That is embarrassing.
Jordan's not even... Jordan
he's still... Still there.
Well...
Matt Damon'd.
Sorry, Ben. We'll get to you next week. But before we go anywhere, do we have any super chats? 2 weeks in a row, baby.
Wow.
Come on.
We don't.
No.
Oh. I didn't hear
the
guitar.
We have silence here. What is happening? We can't hear anything.
He's got it turned down.
This is ridiculous. What is happening? No. Oh, Brett. I wonder if this is
good
our wonderful
Brett.
Friend
yeah,
Brett from the Ringer. It's got to be $10.
$10? Yeah, that kid had money.
He is. He smelt like money.
He did.
He used to throw it around at people.
He looked from a certain profile since he looks like Ben Franklin, you know.
Let's see what Brett's saying. Jones v. Pereira would be fun, but for the sanctity of the sport, John should not be allowed to come back until he stops ducking and makes the fight we've been waiting for. It's definitely Brett.
Hey.
Jones v. Stipe, too. It's definitely Brett.
It's a good point, man. Like, you're just gonna award Jones, like, you know, for doing that whole song and dance with Aspinall. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel right. But if you could only get him for one fight, and it was, you know, I don't know. I'm torn on
like,
that.
That's why the Francis thing's important, right? Like, you have to fucking make this right. Like, you if you're going to do Jones v. Pereira, you have to do Francis v. Tom. If Tom comes away with this, staring down the barrel of Jolton Almeida, like, well, this is all going on. I mean, I'd feel incredibly
fucking
shortchanged.
You know he is going to.
Man,
I was the one when we were speculating about all this before. I'm like, yeah, because we were like, you know, Tom Aspinall against Jones or Tom Aspinall against Pereira. And I'm like, you know what it's going to be? It's going to be Tom Aspinall against Cyril Gane. And look where we are.
It's so funny. People keep bringing me on their shows to be like, here's Mr. Europe to tell you that Cyril Gane is actually a great fight with Tom Aspinall. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. Here we go again.
He's about to lie to you. No, it could be a good
Oh man, is that all we got, Jordan, or what's up, lads? Once fantastic super chat from Brett. We love you all. Have a fantastic weekend, whether it be enjoying Ice Wars, whether it be enjoying the UFC event from Rio. I have been Pete C. Carroll. He has been Chuck Mendenhall. Thank you to On Air Jordan. Thank you to Oscar Losef. And thank you to all you beautiful crackheads. We'll be back next week and we'll let Ben in if he wants to come. Very sorry, Ben. Won't happen again, mate. We love you. Mwah.